fight. We're just going to fight today. We're going to debate a lot of stuff, and it's going to be awesome. Welcome to the show, Fantasy Baseball time here. Email us at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Half the show is going to be debates. Half the show, maybe a little bit less, is going to be mailbag. We'll get to your questions. I'm Adam Azer. We've got Chris Towers in today. Hello, Chris.
Hi.
Oh, Chris, every time.
What's up, Adam?
Not much. So Heath Cummings, but welcome back. How was your vacation?
I cannot tell you how happy I am to be here. It feels like it's been forever since I've been on a fantasy baseball podcast. And just to be honest, I think I can speak freely here. The host of the Fantasy Football Podcast is such a jerk. It's nice to be here with you guys. I'm really looking forward to it.
It is such a different tone. Hosting the two different podcasts. So yes, no, I will not be a jerk today, although I am making you all fight about rankings. And Scott, I did request that somebody go check on you last night. Nobody did.
No, I had no visitors, no consolation at my doorstep.
Wait, Scott went to Georgia. He's a bulldog. Mm-hmm. We podcasted a day after the Super Bowl. I believe last year, and it was like I've never heard you in a state like that. You seem to be okay right now.
Well, I've been conditioned, Adam.
I guess,
like there is no lower point as a sports fan than last year's Super Bowl. So this, I mean,
so Scott's team loses a bowl game, and everyone's worried about him. But when FIU loses the Bad Boy Mowers Gasparilla Bowl because their quarterback got hurt four plays into the game, nary a peep from my supposed friends. I see how it is.
Yeah, and I
get it.
Really know, like, I'm sorry that your team, Scott, lost, Scott, but it was a consolation game.
That's
like,
true.
We'd already determined the national champion.
Yeah, it's UCF, clearly, right? Heath is all about this UCF thing. Scott, I'm sorry. That was, I mean, obviously, I was rooting against Alabama. I don't really have anything against them, but I'm tired of seeing them win. And
it's okay. It's better this way. You know, you get thinking like, maybe this is going to happen. And what do I do? Like, I don't know what to do with my hands. Like, right. It's just, you know, I'm comfortable in this space as of sports fandom where often good, never the best. And, you know what? Whatever.
All right. We'll wrap it up. I just want to know what did you do? What was your reaction?
Did you curse? I had to subdue my reaction a little. Like my biggest reactions were when Alabama missed the field goal at the end of regulation. Yeah. And, you know, I was already defeated at that point. So it was like, he missed it. But, you know, I was kind of having to keep the volume down because a baby who never sleeps was actually sleeping in the next room.
Okay.
So there was that. And then right before the final play, Georgia got the sack, like a 15-yard loss on the sack, putting them out of field goal range. And it's like, oh, all they have to do is stop them three times and this is over. This could actually happen. Oh, wait, never mind. It was like it went from this extreme high to, oh, it's over. Just like
it was
like
quick.
That.
Yeah, it was quick.
Yeah.
So did you curse at all? Did you like utter any profanity?
No, I mean
Scott doesn't curse.
Yeah, I know. But if anything would make someone curse, it would be that play. All right.
No.
Maybe
it
next
was,
time.
It was just like, you know, just let them make the field goal then, you know? Like I was already prepared for it then.
Yeah.
You feel like when they miss the field goal, it's like, okay, maybe this is fated to happen. Like maybe
Yeah. Well, look, I'm glad you're in. There's no chance I would have been at work the next day if that had happened.
Azer, I wouldn't worry about that.
Hey, come on. We're making progress. We're in the Orange Bowl. People actually did watch our bowl game. So just one quick news item. The Blue Jays acquired Yonhervis Solarte from the Padres. He had a pretty good 2016 season. He had an .808 OPS in 109 games. He was better at home or better on the road. And goes to a better park now, but coming off a bad season, Solarte had a .730 OPS, batted .255, 18 home runs in 128 games, not terrible. What is the value of Yonhervis Solarte with the Blue Jays now?
I I feel like it could go up just because of lineup support and venue change, but there is possibly a playing time crunch there that didn't exist in San Diego. Devin Travis is hurt all the time, so it's hard to know exactly how much he's going to interfere with Solarte's playing time. Either one of them could potentially play some left field, because now the Blue Jays only have Steve Pierce slotted there.
Solarte can play pretty much anywhere.
Yeah.
They played 24 games at shortstop last year, 18 at third base, or 22 at third base, 79 at second. So
they have too many players right now. I feel like the Josh Donaldson trade is coming.
They've
got too many players.
As injury prone as Tulo and Travis are up the middle, but like they needed a player like this. I don't think the Donaldson trade's coming. I could be wrong, but I feel like this was a less of a gentle transition to a lesser player at the position than just we are still trying to compete here, so let's make our team better.
Okay.
So you think Solarte is a utility player until someone gets hurt?
I mean, he's a super utility player. He's an everyday player who will play a lot of places.
So does that make Solarte draftable in a, you know, middle infield league?
He already was.
Okay.
This hurts, drafted? I think, for now, unless the trade happens, in my opinion.
All right. All right, well, enough about him. So let's do some make or break. I'm going to give you some players and where they went in the roto draft that we did a few weeks ago, and you tell me if they're more likely to make or break your team. But here's the twist. I'm devilish today. Okay, so is that a word? Devilish?
Yes.
Okay, good. That's me.
Mm-hmm.
One of you is going to have to take the make side, and one of you is going to have to take the break side, no matter what you actually believe. And
then mental exercise.
Yeah. Now the third person.
You're going to give Scott a headache.
You know, I used to write my college papers. I would always take the side that I didn't feel like many people were going to take.
I would write other people's papers for money.
Oh, goodness.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Good for you.
He's academically dishonest.
I would make fun of you for that, except I wrote someone's paper to impress a girl one time. And I may have worked. I'm not sure. So, all right. So one of you has to take the make side, one the break side, and the other can decide who made the better argument. And then we can all talk about how we really feel. Bryce Harper, 7th overall. Bryce Harper was the number 18 outfielder in points, number 13 in Roto last year. The year before that, he was number 6 in points, number 16 in Roto. The year before that, he was number 1 in points in Roto. So Bryce Harper, make or break at number 7 overall. Heath, make the case for Harper as a make player, making your roster.
He could be the best player in fantasy this year. If he just stays healthy, if everything goes right, he is the best hitter in baseball. He may lead baseball in home runs. He may lead baseball in runs. He may lead baseball in just about every category except for stolen bases.
Okay, Scott, break. He's going to break your team. Make the argument.
Did you see what happened in 2016, Adam? He had this neck, back thing going on, shoulder thing, all sorts of things that he was trying to play through, and it was a disaster. And then, you know, what was it, 2014? He couldn't even play through that injury. He is a player who plays with an all-out style that invites injuries, and playing through those injuries doesn't always seem to be a good thing for him. So, he's as good as Trout at his best, I think, but he has a lot more downside attached to him.
All right, that's Bryce Harper, 7th overall. Chris Towers, who made the better case, Judge Towers?
Scott's heart wasn't in it, and you can tell that from the beginning. Yeah, I just look. How do you make the case against Bryce Harper without bringing up the fact that he played 111 games last season?
Yeah, Scott, you really like that, bury the lead.
You mentioned the injuries, but this is a guy who has played 150 games exactly one time in his career. He played 147 in 2016 and wasn't that good. He's played less than 123 out of his 6 seasons. He's injury prone. He can't stay healthy. Now, that is essentially the case you made. But the case for him over the last 3 seasons, he's hit .296, and his 162-game pace is 38 homers, 118 runs, 108 RBI, 13 stolen bases. Bryce Harper at number 7 might be a discount.
So do we all think at the end of the day that Bryce Harper is more likely to make your team than break your team at number 7 overall?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. I think Chris just argued with himself, though.
Yeah, that he kind of did.
That was something to behold.
He felt left out.
He didn't have anybody to argue with, so he had to, can't not argue.
All right, the next guy, we're going to let Scott make the case for Cody Bellinger with the 3rd pick of round 3, 26th overall in this Roto League. Cody Bellinger, 26th overall. Scott, you're going to make the case for Bellinger. Chris, you're going to make the case against, and then the Honorable Judge Heath Cummings will decide. This is your boy, Scott. Cody Bellinger.
Yeah, I don't know why it's specifically my boy. I mean, I feel like the numbers kind of speak for themselves, and more to the point, the bad at ball tendencies back them up. He has the perfect combination of fly ball tendencies, hard hit tendencies, pull tendencies. He is going to be a monster power hitter for a long time to come. And unlike, you know, the rookie from the other league, Aaron Judge, Bellinger made some improvements with the strikeouts over the course of the season. It wasn't nearly as bad in the end. So you're getting him relative to Judge much later. And, you know, 3.58 points per game for Bellinger last year, 3.44 for Jose Abreu. I don't think you're taking Abreu much later than the 3rd pick of round 3 either.
Chris Towers, he's going to break your team. Tell me why, Cody Bellinger.
Because in the third, with the 3rd pick of the 3rd round, you mentioned Jose Abreu. That's a really good example of someone who's unbelievably safe. He may not have huge upside, but if you compare him to Anthony Rizzo over the last 5 seasons, he's basically been the same guy. And Anthony Rizzo goes 2 rounds ahead of him. Cody Bellinger, look, he had a really nice rookie season. Are we sure he can hit lefties? He did a good job of it last season, but he's a young left-handed power hitter who strikes out a lot. There's a chance that that strikeout rate buries him. He's going to make
it. Scott wins.
He's reaching.
You can tell who doesn't actually believe what they're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. He did struggle against – no, he didn't struggle against lefties. He was great against lefties. I'm sorry.
It's one season. Yeah. That's the case against him.
Right. Sophomore slumps happen.
Sophomore slump. Exactly.
Leagues adjust.
Yeah.
Right. It's one season. The minor league track record doesn't back this up. The scouting reports do, but he wasn't a great hitter in the minors. He was just a pretty good one. There's a chance he just had a really good season. There's a chance we just saw the best season of Cody Bellinger's life.
What do we think about
it? What we've said of Aaron Judge.
26th overall, which is like 6 spots ahead of where Abreu went in this draft. More likely to make or break at 26th overall, Bellinger.
Make.
I think you're probably paying for the ceiling at first base there.
I would agree with that. That's the argument you should have made. You would have won.
All right. Next up, Heath will be against Alex Bregman with the 29th overall pick. And Chris will be making the case for Alex Bregman to make your team. 6th pick of round 3, 29th overall. Alex Bregman, go, Chris.
I'm making the case that he will make your team. Okay, we're talking about, look, Cody Bellinger goes in the 26th round. We're talking about paying for production, but also paying for upside with Cody Bellinger.
Wait, what? Talk about 26th overall, not 26th round.
26th overall.
You are fired.
Yes.
Alex Bregman's 29th overall.
Yes. You're talking about paying for upside. Alex Bregman's got a ton of upside. He had a bad season last year and finished with 19 homers, 71 RBI, 88 runs scored, 17 steals. That offense might be even better next season with all the young guys still developing. And we saw how good Alex Bregman was in the second half of the season. He's a shortstop. We know how hard it is to find elite production at that position. There's 30-25 upside with Alex Bregman if everything clicks this season. You don't want to pay for the Jose Abreu types. You know what you're going to get from them, and it's pretty good. You want to pay for the guys who have a chance to break into that elite top 5, and Alex Bregman has that potential.
Okay, yeah, he was the number 3 shortstop in points, number 4 in Roto. So, Heath, why would Alex Bregman break your team if you took him 29th overall?
Well, it's going to be really tough when halfway through June you're in last in average and struggling in other categories because your shortstop's killing you and you're trying to find somebody else to see if you could start a middle infielder over him.
He's just making up a scenario.
Why would he
because he repeats what he did at the start of 2000, 16 okay. and, or 17. And what he did when he first came up to the majors in 2016, he's a chronically slow starter that's going to put you in a hole in Roto that you can't dig out of.
He also didn't finish very well last season. He was bad.
In the postseason, yeah. I don't count that.
So was Bellinger. Nobody made that argument.
I like Alex Bregman a lot. The third round?
That's the case. That's
really?
The thing, right?
29th overall is crazy for Alex Bregman.
Hey, you're the worst lawyer ever, Chris. You're supposed to be backing him up. All right, Scott.
You know what? I this is in a Roto League.
Yeah.
I actually have Bellinger. Oh, sorry, I'm looking at last year's ring. It'll take a second to pick up. I think Chris won the argument. And I just wanted to point this out for Bellinger. He is eligible at third base and shortstop. My top shortstop,
Bregman.
Yes, Bregman. Sorry. My top shortstop is Carlos Correa, who averaged 3.8 fantasy points per game last year. My top third baseman is Nolan Arenado, who averaged 3.8 fantasy points per game last year. From July 4th on last year, Alex Bregman averaged 3.7 fantasy points per game.
What happened on July 4th?
It's Independence Day, Chris.
When it started.
Mm-hmm.
Now, fireworks.
Yeah, like that.
He look, also
maybe
go ahead,
and I'm gonna take the other side now because I don't believe in Alex Bregman.
Yeah, Chris thinks I won the argument.
In the 29, I think again you're paying for ceiling here, and this is what happens in these early Roto people, in these early mock drafts. People plant their flag. I want to be the Alex Bregman guy, so I'm gonna go reach for him at a place where nobody else is going to get him.
We haven't
seen elite production from Alex Bregman.
Well,
we've seen a good stretch.
For a shortstop, we've seen elite production.
Seasons are more predictive than half season.
Yes, but he's also a 23-year-old.
Sure, you can
incredible...
say a young player is moving forward, except that he got to the postseason and stunk.
Do you like him better
that
than
was
Lindor?
Like 2 weeks. Do I like him better than who?
Lindor?
No.
Hold on.
Lindor's proven elite. I mean, it's
well, that's what I, like Lindor's a
but
third
no,
round.
There is no
pitcher,
there is no pitcher. Elite hitter you can draft in the third round. Like the elite hitters are gone by the end of round two. So you know you're looking at potential elite hitters, and I don't know that I have him as high as I have so many spreadsheets here. It's hard to find the right one. I want to figure
out
exactly.
You dismiss the postseason, which is 78 plate appearances, and that's fine. But that's 20% of what you're saying represents the Alex Bregman who's worth drafting in the third round.
He faced the Dodgers, the Yankees, and the Red Sox. I mean, he faced Chris Sale. He faced Severino, Tanaka.
Everybody's hitting home runs.
All right. Okay, so here we go. I have Bregman 39th in Roto, so a little lower than this. More of a fourth rounder. These are the hitters I have after him. And you guys just tell me which ones you want more. Understanding that Bregman is a shortstop and these other guys are not. These are the hitters I have right after him. Tommy Pham, Rhys Hoskins, D. Gordon, Nelson Cruz, Edwin Encarnacion.
Those are guys you have ahead of?
Yes.
In Roto, I'd rather have D. Gordon.
Yes.
I'd rather have Nelson Cruz.
But he's DH only.
I'd probably rather have Edwin Encarnacion. I'd rather pay for guys who I know can do it for a full season.
Who you know have done it in the past, but they're both on the wrong side of 35.
Sure, but...
And
like Alex Bregman, you're betting
Bregman
on,
hasn't even approached his prime yet.
Sure, but you're betting on one half season.
No, I'm betting
where he was.
I'm betting on a very talented
guys.
Player who had a very good season and showed signs of becoming great in the second half.
Yeah, I think as a rule, second half is overrated.
This is where
they have to get better at some point.
This is where draft position changes my opinion because I have Bregman as my number five shortstop. I think he's going to be very good. I think he would be an excellent breakout candidate, but you can't call him a breakout candidate if he's a sixth pick in the third round.
How is your number five shortstop not a top 40 player?
29th overall was where the discussion was.
I know, but you guys were taking exception to my 39 ranking.
I didn't say anything about that.
Okay, you said you'd rather have some of the players.
Well,
behind.
Yes, that's true.
He said you should have had him 40th.
I have Bregman 51st.
I think that's more reasonable.
Yeah, I don't know if you're getting him there.
12 spots difference.
Well, it's 22 spots.
29th might feel a little bit early, but you know, he also has 20 steal potential. I think you even said he has like 25 steal potential when you were pretending to like him at that spot, Chris. So that can't be completely overlooked here. Is it like Abreu and Encarnacion, these guys are obviously not going to do that.
Sure, but he also, over, you know, his 162 game pace for his career 15 steals.
He stole
19 bases in – or he stole 20 bases in 146 games in the minors. It's easier to steal bases in the minors.
Yeah.
Let me just ask you this, Chris. Do you feel like Alex Bregman at age 23 – We've already seen the best version of Bregman we're going to see.
No.
No.
So if you're acknowledging he's going to get better, why is it not logical for him to get better the year after he showed?
But that doesn't mean that the second half – Look,
I'm not
– Historically, if you split seasons up into halves, they are less predictive of the future season than the previous season as a whole. So if you're – now, look, young players do trend upwards. But this wasn't a trending upwards. This was
Alex Bregman?
Him being a disaster and then him turning into a superstar. That's not a trend. That's just kind of random.
He's
probably a low 800s OPS bat right now with the ability to improve moving forward. He's definitely going to improve.
He had
Rougned Odor did not improve.
Sorry. He had an 858 OPS from May 1st on. So even if you just take away 1 month, we're not even talking second half. We're talking 5 months of 858 OPS.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
What happened on April 30th?
Chris, he had a bad month. I mean, this stuff happens all the
time. He had a bad month at the end, too, though.
A terrible month. Are you talking about the playoffs or are you talking about August?
Yeah.
Again, I don't think you can count the playoffs because
– I feel like we do this really, really randomly.
No, it's not random.
Because I remember last season an argument in favor of Kyle Schwarber was look how awesome he was in the playoffs.
He barely played last year, and he came back and he was really good in the playoffs. He had a terrible season, but if he gets going
to
face
that's all he played last. That's all we had to go on for Schwarber last
year. Well, no, but we had the previous season where
not
he was
many
just
of
okay.
us on this podcast were arguing for Kyle Schwarber last
right,
year.
Right, but I'm talking about the fantasy community as a whole.
Well,
we distribute these arguments randomly.
Of course we do.
When they fit us.
I don't think it's that random, though. It's like he had a terrible month, and then after that he had an 858 OPS for the whole season. And if you look at the entire season, he was the number 3 shortstop in points and number 4 in Roto.
But he wasn't the number 29 player.
Being a top 4 shortstop and stealing 17 bases in Roto isn't that far off from being a top 30 player.
I think it's pretty far off. I don't think positions matter that much.
All right. So that's Alex Bregman. Let's do one more of these. I had 6. We'll do 4, and then we'll go to some rankings debates, and then we'll finish with some emails. Should we do Syndergaard, Cano, or Sano?
Syndergaard.
No, let's do Cano or Sano, since we talked about Syndergaard last week.
All right. Let's do Cano.
Okay, Cano. Robbie Cano. So wait, who's the defense attorney? That would be Heath. Scott is prosecuting. Robinson Cano was the 8th pick of round 5, 56th overall. Cano is coming off a down season where he was the number 8 second baseman in points, number 11 in Roto. The year before that, he was top 4 at second base with 39 home runs. 2017, he hit 23 home runs and 280. So, Heath, make the case that Robinson Cano is going to make your team with the 56th overall pick. Scott will make the case that Cano will break your team. Break yourself. Go ahead, Heath.
You know, we talk a lot about how we're going to move Alex Bregman up because he's shortstop eligible. Second base is pretty awful as well. In fact, at the top, second base may actually be worse than shortstop is. And Cano, you just said it, his down year was the number 8 second baseman in fantasy. The guy is so remarkable in terms of getting to that 650, 680 plate appearance mark each and every year. You've got that stability. And I do expect the power numbers to come back just a little bit. He's going to be in a great lineup. Should have 100 RBI. The BABIP will bounce back just a little bit as well.
Okay, that's pretty good. The defense rests. Scott, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Well, I actually do have him 72nd, so much lower than he went in this draft. So these are my legitimate thoughts. And you referred to 2017 as a down season for him. I think 2016 was an up season for him. You look at his 4 years in Seattle. The 23 home runs he hit last year was the second highest total in that 4 year span. So I don't know what happened to him in 2016, but that's the outlier. That's not how we should view Cano. That's not the Cano norm going forward. And considering he's now on the wrong side of 35, I think it's more likely to get worse than better from here. So I don't think, yes, I agree. Second base is thin at the top. I don't think Cano fits at the top anymore.
Judge Towers.
I think Scott's correct here. I think Scott made the more persuasive argument. I don't think Heath's heart was in it. And I just think 2016 is absolutely the outlier for Robbie Cano over the last four seasons. He's been pretty good, but not great.
Mm-hmm. All right, so does anybody think that 56th overall, middle of round five in a 12-team league is okay for Robinson Cano?
I think it's too early.
It's too early.
Yep.
Okay. I think if I'm going to, you know, be on Heath's defense team and make the case for him.
I'm not even on my team.
If he I will take over. If he can stay healthy, I do think he can play well. But apparently Scott Servais said he was playing hurt the second half of the season, and that always seems to be the case with Cano now, and he's 35 years old. But, I mean, if you get a season where he actually is healthy, pre-All-Star break he had an 813 OPS. It's not bad. 17 home runs before the All-Star break. Dropped down to 764 OPS after that. That would be my only case there. But
I'd be more likely to stump for him in a points league, I think.
Yeah, that makes sense, too. Let me see the second baseman that went after him. Is Gene Segura second base eligible? No, right?
Nope.
No. Then I think we have a... Oh, Whit Merrifield went around later than him.
Yeah. I do have Merrifield lower than Cano. So
who do you have ahead of Cano?
I have Altuve, Jose Ramirez, Altuve, Jose Ramirez, Brian Dozier, Daniel Murphy, Jonathan Scope. Those are the five I had have ahead of Cano.
See, I only have four ahead of him, and the Scope not being one of them. So that's why, like, at 56 overall, maybe that's too high, but he was probably the fifth second baseman taken, and that's probably right.
All righty. So that's make or break. Now we'll do a segment that's very, very similar. Only these guys will not have to pretend to take stands. It's a rankings debate. So, Chris, you get to sort of be the arbitrator again. And we'll talk about some differences in Scott and Heath's rankings. Now, what I have on my paper here may not actually be correct, so you can correct me if I'm wrong. So Heath has Evan Gattis third overall at catcher. Scott has him 10th. Is that true, Scott?
I have him 6th.
In a points league?
Yes.
Okay.
So third for Heath is still very high.
Who are the catchers that you have ahead of Gattis that Heath doesn't?
Okay. So is this in a points league we're specifying?
Yes.
Let me make sure I have those rankings open. Okay. So, you know what? I actually have Gattis 7th.
Oh, good.
More
good.
Interesting. Yes. All right. Gary Sanchez, Buster Posey, Wilson Contreras. I assume just Sanchez and Posey are ahead of Gattis.
Sanchez here. And Posey are the only two I have. Okay, Posey and Sanchez, I should say.
Wilson Contreras, Salvador Perez, JT Realmuto, and even Yadier Molina I have ahead of Gattis. And a point.
Yadier Molina. All right.
Yep.
All right, Heath. Third overall.
Here's the thing, and I understand the idea of ranking Gattis much lower in a points league because his playing time has been so sporadic over his career. I don't expect that to be an issue this year. The Astros are going to make Evan Gattis their full-time DH. They don't really even want him catching very much. I expect him to be more of an emergency third catcher. That doesn't mean he plays every single day, but I expect him to get closer to his 2015 playing time than what we've seen each of the past two seasons. His injury risk is lower, not having to play in the field. And Gattis, when he plays a full season, is about as good as it gets at catcher. There's a chance that he's the number one catcher this year.
I really don't disagree.
In 2015, he was the number two catcher. He hit 27 homers, drove in 88 runs that season, and he actually has catcher eligibility this season, which he actually did not in 2015.
Actually, he did have it in 2015, looking back. He was catcher eligible then, so legitimately.
Did he go
the
into the
two.
Season?
Yeah.
Catcher? Okay.
Yeah,
was it 2016 he didn't?
2016 he didn't, but even in 2016 he gained it during the season.
And he finished top five. He was fifth in points, fourth in Roto, Evan Gattis, in 2016. Last year wasn't a great year. He batted .263 with 12 home runs in 300 at-bats. If you had given him 400 at-bats, then he would have been the number seven catcher in points leagues, and 400 at-bats is a lot lower than what he's probably going to get. That would have ranked just 10th at the position. So, Scott, you only have Gattis 7th. You got old man Yadier Molina ahead of him, along with Contreras.
The only one I really take exception to Heath ranking behind Gattis is Wilson Contreras, who, I think proved himself to be borderline elite, if not for some injuries last year. But Gattis, like, I in an ideal world, he does play every day for the Astros. I don't think he's actually going to be their everyday DH. I was looking at an article on the Houston Chronicle. This is from mid-December, where A.J. Hinch was kind of laying out his plan for how they're going to approach the DH spot. And the way he puts it in here is, yes, Gattis will be the primary DH. That's primarily where he'll be in the lineup. But so that they can take advantage of Marwin Gonzalez's versatility, they're not just going to fix him in left field. They're going to move him around the diamond and use the DH spot to give their fielders days off from the field. So that sounds like a lot of time off for Gattis. And yes, they don't want him catching that much. They'll probably have a true backup on the roster, and Gattis will be more like a third catch-up. I'm sure he'll catch some, but I don't know that the playing time is going to be vastly improved for him. So
the counterpoint to that would be they had all those guys. They had Evan Gattis last year, and Carlos Beltran still got 509 plate appearances. If Evan Gattis gets 509 plate appearances, he's probably a top five catcher.
Yeah, I don't think – 599 is his high back in 2015. Is that right? I don't think he gets to that mark. I think the 509 is probably more realistic. I love Contreras. I think Contreras is better than Evan Gattis. He has a higher injury risk playing catcher. I worry that he's not going to get as many plate appearances as Evan Gattis this year.
All right, Chris, who's it going to be, Wilson Contreras or Evan Gattis?
I am higher on Evan Gattis than Scott is. We had this conversation in the office the other day, I think.
Oh, well, but I wasn't there.
Would you take him over Wilson Contreras?
I'd rather have Wilson Contreras.
Well, didn't really.
But I still win the argument because he has him fourth.
And by the way, I should point out, I do have Gattis fifth in Roto.
Okay.
As all opposed right. to seventh. I have him ahead of Realmuto and Molina in that format.
All right. This debate has gotten a little bit less sexy as it has gone on. The real rankings debate, we've already done this one a few months ago, is Heath having Buster Posey over Gary Sanchez, which must it's come crazy. Down to pure Yankees hate. I think that is the only...
It's crazy.
Now, Sanchez has to make up a lot of points in terms of walks and strikeouts. He loses like 180 points just in those two categories.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Wasn't he better? Was he better in points per game last year, Scott? Gary Sanchez?
I'm sorry. Who was it?
Was Gary Sanchez better than Posey?
Oh yeah. It was Gary Sanchez was 3.38 points per game. Posey was 2.89. Big difference.
Well, if we just wanted to rank everything based on last year, we wouldn't have jobs.
He managed to make up for those walks and strikeouts, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. So Scott, do you have Zach Cozart seventh at shortstop?
Not anymore. Now he's more like 10th or 11th. I'm not sure exactly because I have amended it as I've done a top 600 and without going back and adjusting the position by position. So it's like 10th or 11th for Cozart.
That's good enough. So 10th okay. or 11th, 10th and a half for Zach Cozart, who will now be the third baseman for the Angels. And Heath has him 16th. So I'll give the first word to Scott here, since you're still higher on Zach Cozart, coming off a great, great season, 297, 24 home runs in only 122 games. You're higher on Cozart than Heath is.
Yeah, and I wanted to have him seventh. It was me moving him down was one of those situations where just from doing a couple mock drafts, it is abundantly clear to me there's no way you have to draft him that high. But I think he's a better hitter than Xander Bogaerts. Even though some of what he did last year was kind of out of nowhere, I mean, there was a steady
power. It's
not
kind of out of nowhere. He's a 716 career OPS.
His strikeout rate has always been low. The walks and the power took a step forward last year, but in a way that, like, it's not like you can look at the batted ball tendencies and say, okay, he was obviously faking it here. And I know we kind of had dealt with that, we had that same situation with Aledmys Diaz last year, and he fell flat on his face. But I feel like you're not going to have to pay nearly as much for Cozart, so I'm happy taking that gamble on him. And B, that's still a situation I'm going to bet on 9 times out of 10, just because it burned us with Diaz last year. So I feel comfortable with Cozart as my starting shortstop, and you know, even ranking him 10th or 11th, that probably means like a 15th round pick.
Yeah, I've got him 16th, and I would like to find some other shortstops that I could put ahead of him. I don't want him to be my starting middle infielder in a roto league. Coming into last year, he had a 672 career OPS. That's an OPS plus of 82. He was never a good offensive player. He would have a month or two here or there. He's 32 years old. He just had his career year, and he's going from Cincinnati, which is a great hitter's park, to Los Angeles, which is a bad, or Anaheim, or Orange County, or wherever they're
parked. Los Angeles of Anaheim.
Of Orange County.
Right.
Which is a big downgrade.
Yes.
And I'm afraid, and I haven't seen their lineup yet, but where do we think Zach Cozart's going to hit in this lineup with all of these good hitters?
I don't know.
And if that's not all enough, he's not even played 147 games since 2014.
Okay. His home road splits, just looking at them now. Yeah, I mean,
a better average at home.
Better average. The power is not that much different.
Actually, more power on, well, more home runs on the road.
All right, so that, the thing about that is, if you hit in a better hitter's park and you don't seem to, if and your numbers in that hitter's park aren't substantially better, you still benefit from that hitter's park. So whether your numbers are better or not, he's going from a park that was the best in baseball for right-handed home runs to one that ranks 24th in park factors for right-handed home runs. I'll split the difference. I don't think he's nearly as good as he was last year. I don't think there's any real reason to think he will be. The hard hit rate was pretty much identical to the year before. His exit velocity was actually only 86 miles an hour, which is below average. He benefited a lot from the park he played in. However, the previous two seasons, he was more like a mid-700s OPS bat, and that can play at shortstop. I just think it's more as a middle infielder than as a starting shortstop.
So I just want to point this part out, because I don't think he'll be as good as last year either, but you need to know just how good he was last year. The only there were only three shortstops who averaged more fantasy points per game than Cozart last year, and they were Correa, Trey Turner, and Francisco Lindor. Cozart averaged more than Corey Seager. He averaged more than Elvis Andrews. He was a stud last year, and I don't think he'll be a stud again, but if there's any legitimacy to what he did last year at that position, I'm taking the chance on him for as late as I can do it. I haven't actually gotten the opportunity yet because my infield spots have all been full by the time that point the draft came. But it seems like a really good gamble to take where he's going.
I'm fine taking that gamble as a middle infielder.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is what happened in the roto draft we did. I'll take a look at Tobin's team. But Tobin took Zach Cozart in the 14th round. And that he's a shortstop. His middle infielder is Scooter Jeanette. Okay, so but 14th round, so still, you know, getting pretty late there in a 12-team league. Let's do a couple pitchers here. We haven't talked about any pitchers yet today. Heath has Jose Berríos 24th. Scott, you do not have Berríos even close to that, right? Or not that far from 24th.
You have him 24th, Heath?
Yep.
I have him 38th.
Okay, so Berríos 24th for Heath. Scott's got him 38th. Chris, why don't you take the first word on Berríos? Is he closer to 24th or 38th?
Well, we talked about this in the last podcast, and yeah, I'm not sold on Jose Berríos being a very good pitcher. I think the stuff is just okay. The swinging strike rate is just average. Look,
the stuff looks better than this.
The
stuff.
Slider,
yes,
the looks stuff is really good. There are a lot of GIFs of this slider. this is kind of an esoteric thing, and I'm not sure that you guys will agree, but I think his slider has too much break. It breaks too early. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, I think he kind of telegraphs it.
Okay.
Like, batters can see. I think a better slider is one that breaks late and tight versus a
like
big
the Worthen slider.
Sure, yeah. I think
we'd like to protect his elbow, though.
It's kind of a big, loopy.
Just like the Worthen slider. It doesn't have to be the Worthen slider.
I guess it's technically a curveball. Either way, the point, it has a lot of lateral movement, and I'm not totally impressed by it, and the numbers back that up.
All right. So, Heath, Scott, get on in there.
You're talking about a 24-year-old starting pitcher who was one of the best pitching prospects in baseball, who just looked like he kind of started to figure it out last year. And I'm completely throwing out what happened to him in those 14 starts in 2016. Maybe that's not fair, but he was absolutely dominant in AAA each of the last 2 years. And I would expect him to continue to get better. I think the Twins are going to be a pretty good team. They are the second best team in their division and maybe the best. So I think the wins opportunity will be there. Between AAA and the majors, he threw 185 innings last year, so I don't have any innings concerns at all.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's not to like.
You know, I think it sounds like if Chris had rankings this year, he might even rank him lower than I had Barrios 38th. But to kind of reinforce what Chris was saying, Barrios came out of the minors last year and looked like a world beater.
Mm-hmm.
He had like an 8-start stretch, 2.67 ERA, and then it seemed like the league kind of adjusted to him because over the last 3 months, ERA over 4. And more concerning to me is, and this might have to do with the breaking ball, even though Barrios had a respectable strikeout rate over 8 per 9, his swinging strike rate was a below average rate. Like it doesn't seem like he was deceiving hitters, even to the extent that he was striking them out. So I don't really know. Like I see the minor league numbers. You know, I like pedigree. I think Barrios could be a really good major league pitcher, but I don't think he was a really good pitcher last year. He was
fine.
He showed some progress and looked like he could be fine. Yeah. I've baked in some upside into my ranking, I feel like, by ranking him 38th. But I don't think he was the 38th best pitcher from the time he arrived in the majors last year.
I don't disagree that there is some upside, but he's been a lot more bad than good in the majors. I don't think we should just throw out 2016. I don't think it's representative necessarily, but it is relevant. Like we're talking about 40% of his career starts. It's only like 30% of his innings because he was so bad.
Sure.
He also has some real platoon issues. And I think that's actually tied. The curveball has a decent swinging strike rate. His four-seam fastball actually has a pretty good swinging strike rate. His changeup basically never gets swinging strikes. And he has a 1.57 strikeout-to-walk ratio against lefties. Now, you can develop that. That is something – the third pitch is something that you would think a young pitcher gets better with. But there's no guarantee of that. And I think ranking him 24th is paying for the upside.
I think the upside's a top 10 starting pitcher this year.
Mm. Well, I did want to get to more, but we have plenty of podcasts. In fact, we have 2 a week going forward, and then eventually 3 a week, 4 a week, 5 a week. During the season, we'll probably do about 18 episodes a week, at least 3 a day. also, we have a new DFS podcast called the Sportsline DFS Podcast. Sportsline DFS Podcast. It is brand new. We launched it yesterday, and you're going to hear me, Heath, Chris, and Mike McClure on that one, different combinations, different days. Just looking at the lineups now, went 1-1. Did not win the FanDuel 50-50, but I did win the DraftKings 50-50. And so we're going to give lineups, but with the disclaimer that you need to be checking the news before lineups lock because things change. But anyway, if you play DFS, you're going to enjoy the show. It's fun. We're going to have more fun than the other DFS podcasts. Let's just put it that way. And hopefully we'll win you some money. No, we will win you some money. I can guarantee that because if we don't, there's nothing you can do. Like, you can't sue me or anything. So there you go. I guarantee it. So we have more fantasy baseball podcasts coming up. Later this week, we'll have another one. We'll do more rankings disputes. For now, let's read some emails. FantasyBaseball@CBSI.com. From Baldhead B in a Midwest city.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting name.
Dayton.
Interesting city.
Dayton, Ohio. Sure.
I have a feeling this guy doesn't want to be identified. This man or woman doesn't want to be identified.
Bald head. I would hope this is a man. He says, "Dear crazy, lazy, busy, and wish."
Oh. That is Bone Thugs and Harmony.
Sure is. I live near a place called Croton Harmon, and I always call it Bone Thugs and Croton Harmony. Isn't that funny?
Sure.
So.
I thought you lived in Sleepy Hollow.
Near Croton Harmon. Okay. Yeah, I do live in Sleepy Hollow. All right, so he did a fab league for football, and he loved it. Now he's wondering, his league is expanding from 10 to 12 teams, head-to-head points. Can he use Fab? What do you think of Fab in baseball? Is the season too long to manage it? If not, what is a good Fab dollar amount? Is there a best day for waivers if we do Fab? As you can see, I've been struggling with this. Any help would be greatly appreciated. P.S. Coconut thin Oreos with 2% milk is where it's at.
I like all milk. Like real milk.
Whole milk?
Whole milk.
I don't like milk.
Whole milk? Are you a cow? Who drinks whole milk?
I would like to get all of the milk. I don't want 2% of the milk.
We talked about
milk. I don't know why I want 98% water.
We talked about milk a couple weeks ago, and Chris used to be a whole milker, but he's converted.
Yeah, we're doing 2%. I'm just like, milk's fine. I eat it in cereal, and that's about it.
Pro tip, dad tip, if you would like to have 2% milk, buy whole milk, pour it half of it in a glass, fill the rest up with water, and you've got 2% milk.
I don't think that's how it works.
I don't think so either.
Yeah,
I'm not a milkologist.
So anyway,
nice try.
Fab for baseball?
Yeah, we do Fab for baseball all the time. It doesn't have to be any different. We actually usually do 100, just like in football, and people adjust. They learn to conserve their dollars appropriately. But I've seen people use 1,000.
Yes, that's where it's at in my
opinion. Yeah, I mean, it really doesn't matter.
It literally doesn't. Like, I've had this discussion with people in my fantasy football league where they're like, we should increase the Fab budget or we should increase the auction budget to start the season. It doesn't matter. Like, everybody has the same amount of money.
It does matter in baseball.
It matters.
There are 26 periods.
Like, if you find yourself thinking, I don't want to invest a full dollar in this guy, I wish I could do 50 cents, then you should probably increase your budget, I guess. But, like, I've never really found myself in that position personally. As far as for what day it is, I think a Sunday night run going into the lineup block Monday. I mean, assuming it's a weekly lineup league, I think that makes the most sense. And I do prefer that as opposed to the daily running of Fab, because not many Fab dollars are being spent if it's a daily run, because
I don't agree.
You're trusting every league to check every day, and that everybody in the league to check every day. And that's
definitely like the daily Fab.
Daily, yeah. And you need,
I
if you're going
like
to do
there's too many $0 bids that way.
Well, if you're going to, that's fine. So that's kind of like waivers. But if you're going to do $100 and daily Fab, you need to allow $0 bids. Then it'll go quickly if you don't do that in your Fab budget. Because you're gonna make a lot of transactions, so you need $0 bids. Alright, thank you, Baldhead B from Dayton, Ohio. This is Robert from Colorado Springs. 5x5 Roto League. It's categories though, it's head-to-head categories. 6 keepers each season. He says, I have totes with keeping 4 starting pitchers. I don't know what that means. Is that a new slang, I have totes with?
I'm assuming it's totally, but syntax is all wrong.
Right, doesn't make sense. Is that too many pitchers to keep with hitting seemingly easier to get? So basically, he's thinking about keeping 4 starting pitchers. Here are his potential keepers. Scherzer, Bumgarner, Verlander, Keuchel, Altuve, who he's definitely keeping, Eben Encarnacion, and Starling Marte. So I guess he needs to keep 5 out of 6 with Altuve being kept. So 5 out of... Yeah, 5. So go ahead.
I would assume you guys all have or both have Edwin Encarnacion ranked higher than Dallas Keuchel.
Yes. But it sounds like he's just tossing one of these players back, right? There's 7 names here, and he's keeping 6.
Mm-hmm.
I think Starling Marte would be who you know what? 5x5 league, maybe not. Maybe not.
I really like the idea of, you're not starting with your team. Starling Marte is not your second best hitter, but
yeah.
Altuve and Marte.
Yeah, a lot of steals and a lot
that's
of average.
That's a lot of steals and a lot of average. That makes it so that you can kind of not worry. Like, obviously, you still have to worry about batting average, but steals. Those two guys are going to steal 75 bases.
Mm-hmm.
You might, you know, that's a D. Gordon away from a third place finish in fantasy.
This is something we're going to talk about a lot probably during draft prep. The stolen bases and batting average are two of the hardest categories to fill, especially late. If you try and get a batting average or steal specialist late, you're basically sacrificing every other category. So it's nice when you can get your steals filled with guys who help at other things like Altuve and Marte do.
So, okay,
Keuchel's
where's
the
other
one who has to go here in a Roto League?
Yeah.
If it was points, maybe it'd be Marte, but Keuchel in a Roto League
all
is
right.
out.
Cool. Kevin in Columbus. I'm in a 15-team league that distinguishes between right field, center field, and left field. My sense is that this does funky things to calculating replacement level slash depth at each position. Center field always seems deeper than the others, but I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Center field is deeper than the others. You're right.
I would say don't overthink it. A guiding philosophy I'm going to have this season is to not worry too much about positional depth. I don't think.
But that's with
like
no
it matters at the top, and it matters at the bottom. But I think in the middle, for most positions, there's not that big of a difference.
It's definitely not as bad as it used to be. And that actually kind of started last year.
It's really easy to overpay for Corey Seager this season if you think that shortstop is that desperate to fill, and I just don't think you need to.
Or Alex Bregman, I guess, in that case. I agree, that's definitely a good case to go best player available, but it does change things when it's right field, center field, left field, instead of just outfield.
Yeah, I want to say left field is weak. Center field is strong, left field is weak, right field's probably right in the middle, but I haven't extensively studied this.
And there's probably a lot of multi-eligible guys.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, probably.
Like, you think Christian Yelich will probably get center field eligibility this season. Marcell Ozuna might have both. So there's a lot of ways you can go with it.
All right, Bill from Atlanta. Would you trade Contreras, Schwarber, and Hayward? Contreras, Schwarber for Hayward. And Hayward, sorry. Contreras, Schwarber, and Hayward. So all the Cubs. For Kershaw, Wilson Ramos, and Michael Givens in a 24-team keeper league.
Deep league question. It'd have to be a league that deep for Hayward to have any trade value. So that was kind of the tip off.
Did you say Hayward or Schwarber?
Hayward. Oh.
Oh, stop it. Contreras. All right, so it's
I still think you got to get Kershaw, right?
Oh yeah. I'm going to get Kershaw.
Yeah, I mean, Kershaw puts you so far ahead of the competition in a 24 team league.
And
yeah.
I'm not sure, like, I expect Wilson Ramos to bounce back this year.
Yeah. Yeah. He's probably the third best player in this deal. Kershaw, Contreras, and then Wilson Ramos. Obviously a distant third, but the third best.
This is from Garrett. Severino or Bumgarner? Who do you think will be better next year? Would you trade Bumgarner for Severino in a keeper league straight up?
I don't see any point to make this trade.
That's fair. A long-term keeper, like if I'm thinking multiple years down the road, I like it. But if I expect Bumgarner to be better this year, and if I'm trying to win this year, I'd rather have Bumgarner.
You know what's funny is my immediate reaction was to say, yes, trade for Severino, 23-year-old. You know, just looks like he emerged as an ace last year. Bumgarner's only 28. We kind of forget, like, he got started so young.
Yeah.
I do rank Severino ahead of Bumgarner, but by, like, two spots among starting pitchers. Obviously, if you'd be keeping Severino for cheaper, then you'd be keeping Bumgarner, which seems plausible if that's the keeper structure. Then, yeah, you definitely trade Bumgarner for Severino. But if you're keeping them on equal terms, it's just like...
All other things being equal, I think they're pretty equal.
Yeah.
Okay, Chris from West Palm. It's in a 10-team head-to-head points league. Three keepers, one hitter, one pitcher, and one round 15 or later. I will be keeping Trey Turner. I will be keeping Chris Sale. Who is my round 15 or later keeper? Cody Bellinger? Oh, this is JD. This is JD, not Chris. Sorry. JD from the spring training home of the Cubs. Is that Surprise, Arizona?
Daytona? No?
Is it Surprise?
It would be to
Surprise
me.
Surprise is where the Royals and Rangers are.
Oh, okay. Well, they're in Arizona.
You were confusing me. The name of that town had me confused at what you were asking us.
There is a Surprise, Arizona. Yes, all right, JD wants to know who he's keeping. Bellinger or Severino?
He's keeping Bellinger, I guess.
Points league?
I mean, they're so close to me. For me, they're so close.
they're in the studio next to Scott. You got to ask them.
they're both third rounders for me, so it's again, I understand why you're asking us. It's a hard decision, but you kind of just have to go with personal preference. I think I'd go Bellinger.
I'd go Severino.
Neither one is particularly safe based on track record, so there's no tiebreaker there on like Bumgarner. I'll go Severino. It's just a little harder to find that.
All right, now here's Chris from West Palm. He says, hey, Manny, Chris, John, and Tim.
Are Manny, they? Chris, John, and Tim. I always think Manny Ramirez, but that
is this the Baltimore Orioles infield?
Manny Machado and
Chris Davis.
Chris Davis.
Tim Beckham.
Jonathan Scope.
Who's John?
Scope.
John.
Scope. Scope.
Oh, there you go.
Nice.
If you put Jonathan, come on, who calls him John?
I have a feeling we're wrong.
Chris from West Palm.
Chris from West Palm does. All right, he plays in a four-player keeper league. Keepers have three-year contracts and count as picks one through four in, you know, rounds one through four. Assuming that Robert Acuna is not kept.
Ronald.
I knew it sounded wrong coming off the tongue. Ronald Acuna is not kept. How early is too early to pick Acuna? I was thinking of even grabbing him in round 5, 6, or 7, 8 due to long-term upside. I believe he has Trout-level potential. Being that I was the champ, I will more than likely have a pick on the turn. So in a keeper league with three-year contracts, when would you take Acuna?
I think people usually, especially in this type of league, overvalue the future. And so I would not take him probably until 9-10.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. It's just the keeper incentive isn't quite – there isn't quite enough of a long-term incentive in this league since it's just a three-year commitment and you're you know, it'd be one of your first four picks for those 3 years. Like, he's only 20, so, you know, it might take him till 25 to really be a high-end fantasy performer, assuming he ever is. Does he technically have Trout-level potential? Maybe he does, but, like, the potential of that specific outcome is so minute. And there's so many others. You know, he could be a fine player. He could be a first rounder someday and not anywhere close to Trout. But it's just no telling when that's going to happen, if it does. And, like, you're giving up a lot of proven players who are still young by committing to him that way.
What's more likely, Bryce Harper's career or Mike Trout's career?
Well, Harper's career, because it hasn't been as good.
Harper,
that would still be a great outcome.
Right, but Harper wasn't worth a first round pick until his fourth season.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. So would you take, in a keeper league like this, would you take Acuna or Yelich?
I would take Yelich.
Yep.
Yeah, it depends how long the tail is on the keeper, but there's a decent chance Acuna's just Christian Yelich. Like, I think he'll be better than that, but that's a realistic possibility.
But you would expect Yelich to be better this year.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Cool. All right, guys, thank you very much. Good stuff. We're back later in the week. We're looking at Thursday. We'll do some more rankings disputes, talk fantasy baseball. Maybe we'll get a freaking signing, something going on in the hot stove.
Nervous Solarte? That wasn't big news?
Not quite. We're, you know, just below J.D. Martinez level. For Scott, for Heath, for Chris, I'm Adam. Talk to you Thursday.